PSNY.
Yeah, no, I remember when I moved to Harlem because I had that 5-bedroom apartment with four strangers.
The frat my house.
Room. Yeah, and I thought my room was like a pretty decent size. I'm like, $1,000 a month? Like, I cannot touch both walls. Like, the dresser fits in here as well as the bed. Like, this is okay.
New York City is criminally expensive sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I specifically remember I was on a cruise. I must have been like 12 years old when I heard this joke. But okay. you know, cruises, they have those tiny little cabin rooms.
This
guy's whole opening joke was like, yeah, everybody's getting on the ship from like Texas, Oregon. They're looking around, being like, oh, this room is kind of cramped. People walk in from New York. I'm like, oh my God, look at this place. It's huge.
There was one comedian who used to go around the New York comedy scene. He'd be like, so my name's so-and-so. I live in a really small New York City apartment. You know how small the apartment is? It's 5 by 10. You know how small that is? I'm 2 by 6.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Well, if you haven't figured it out already, Allison is not here this week. We've been in a scheduling nightmare for the past couple weeks because Allison's a very busy person. And I also have school, class, whatever. School and class are the same thing. School, work, all that stuff. So this week we're joined by Josh Benjamin returning.
What's happening, guys?
Yeah, returning. This has got to be like fourth, fifth time on the podcast.
Yeah, right around there. Like 4 or 5, yeah.
Yeah, it seems about right. This is episode 128 of the Bleacher Creatures Yankees podcast presented by Elite Sports New York, Crossing Broad, Warwick Gaming, XL Media, and as always, Rivercrest NYC.
All right.
Josh and I actually have another project coming out soon.
We
pretty
do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. Maybe we could throw this up on the channel when we're done here.
Yeah. Well, give the people an intro, Josh. Give the people an intro.
So,
I know you're on the spot. I put you on the spot, but give them an intro.
So, folks, new venture. We've only got a couple videos up there. It's me and a couple of current and former ESNY guys, and we're hopefully going to be adding throughout the year. It is 5 Point Sports Network. You can find us on YouTube and Twitter at 5 Point Sports. Well, I got a couple videos up there. You'll have me and James talking about opening day. You'll have my quick reaction to the Yankees Red Sox series. Still a very raw product, but we're working on it. We're going through the growing pains, but stick around. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and all of the video from these podcasts will be
right.
on the official YouTube
official YouTube home of Bleacher Creatures. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, so if you want to not only listen to me talk about baseball, but also look at my stupid face, there it is. There it is right there. You can just look at me for an hour, just not really moving at all.
My stupid old face and your stupid Thin Mints loving face.
Oh, shut up. I feel like knowing
myself I wouldn't make a Thin Mints joke, but I couldn't resist.
I feel like knowing that this is going to go on YouTube now, like I should be here, like being more expressive and throwing my hands up in the air.
Yeah,
and
talk with your knowing, hands like a true
yeah,
New Yorker.
Yeah, like, come on. Yeah, there's a place to start. Joey Gallo.
Oh, no. Can we not? Oh, God.
What do you want to start with, Josh? What do you want to talk about besides Joey Gallo, the
all
biggest
right,
story
so,
of the week? Actually, second so, biggest Garrett Cole.
So all of Joey Gallo's struggles aside, he is still making very good contact with the ball, which, and James, I think you and I very briefly talked about this over text, is that at this point in the season, compared to last year, the Yankees as a whole are taking much cleaner swings. It's not generating the desired results, but they're working the count better. They're making better contact with the ball. They're putting that ball in play with authority to the point where not everything seems lost. I did a little deep dive after the Orioles series. By this point last season, the Yankees had already been on a 3-game losing streak, had kind of been all over the place offensively. The only thing that this team is doing worse than last year's Yankees through 11 games is scoring runs. That's all they aren't doing. And that kind of tracks with something Jeff Passan said today. Offense is down across the board. It's April. Let's not hit the panic button.
No reason to hit the panic button. But we know how Yankee fans get. with every single game. We know how they are in the first, you know, Aaron Hicks has a bad first three games. And at this point, he's the best hitter on the team. Like, these small sample sizes mean nothing,
nothing.
I'm looking for a few things. I'm looking for pitchers. I'm looking, are they getting whiffs? Are they loading up with strikes? Are they, right. Does their stuff look good? Is their velocity up or down? How is the spin rate? How is the curveball? And first of all, Clark Schmidt, very good in all those categories.
Yes, he is.
And yeah, and for hitting, I'm like, are they at least hitting the ball hard? Are they swinging at good pitches? Like, it's way too early to be worrying about, like, oh, Joey Gallo has a 188 batting average. Well, he's hitting the ball hard and he's swinging at good pitches. It'll level out.
It has been the tried and true case of Joey Gallo ever since he became an everyday Major League Baseball player that he is going to strike out, draw walks, and hit home runs. He doesn't do anything else. He just doesn't. Why are we getting on him for literally doing his job?
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the year, and I know this was a big debate today because of Gary Sheffield Jr., who, despite being the son of a Major League Baseball player, who, by the way, had a very good weighted runs created plus, just has no idea what analytics are, or just doesn't care, or just wants to, he just realizes his audience is people who don't care about analytics. So he just says, okay, they don't exist to me either. It's too early. It's too early for analytics. At the end of the year, Joey Gallo is probably going to be around a 120 weighted runs created plus. That's good. Guess what? 20% above league average at creating runs by the math. We don't have to worry about it. If I had a dollar for every time I had done, I was doing the Gary Age show almost every day last year when Joey Gallo was, when the trade rumors start flying, and when Joey Gallo was like, okay, this is going to be a Yankee. Every single day I was hopping on and saying, old school Yankee fans are going to hate watching Joey Gallo play baseball.
That's right.
But at the end of the year, I promise you, he will have good numbers.
If there's one thing about Joey Gallo that we can say is that he is probably the most frustrating guy to watch on the Yankees because, and I realized this from a friend of mine who is a Yankees fan and also works as a hitting coach. He has one mechanical flaw in his swing. Here, we're going to use the highlighter as an example. So with the really small bat here.
Because video. We got video now.
So with Anthony Rizzo, you'll see him when he's taking a swing. He always keeps his bat level. It's real smooth, real like he's kind of brushing the table and staying level as he flies off the table. Joey Gallo at the last possible second right through there tilts the bat upwards.
And he's going for the home run ball because that's his game.
That's right. He tilts it very ever so upwards at the last possible second, opens up his hips. And that's why you have those really high launch angles with that really high exit velocity. But even still, he's making hard contact with the ball.
Yeah. And we don't have to worry. In fact, he is striking out less statistically, but
after last night, we'll see.
But he is striking out less statistically so far through the year. Guess what? Doesn't matter. It's only been 11 days. But you know, that's how much can you complain about Joey Gallo? You want him to strike out less? Okay. I'm striking out less than last year. It's still going to be a lot.
Not to name drop on here, but I had a chat with John Yastrzemski recently of the New York podcast on The Ringer. And I asked him, like, what is it with Yankees fans? Why are they so negative? And he said, look, I think that to be perfectly honest with you, that once Garrett Cole was signed, Yankees fans thought that's the missing piece.
It doesn't work like that anymore.
It's not even that. Then there was the COVID season. Then there was 2021 where it was very clear, like everyone was pressing. Marcus Thames kind of ruined the team. And now it's a much more standard level-headed approach. It's 11 games in. Like, you got to give this team time to find its groove. The fact, like I said, there are cleaner swings all over the place right now. Why, like, that's already a great sign. This is a better team compared to last year.
Oh, it's undoubtedly a better team than last year. It's undoubtedly, the offense on paper is undoubtedly better than it was last year on paper.
Right. And like the runs aren't going to translate themselves yet, but they'll get there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to translate. It's not like Josh Donaldson forgot how to walk. He's just off to a slow start. It's not like Joey Gallo is all of a sudden now trying to become a contact hitter. It's just small sample size, man. Let the whole season play out. Let a month go by and then look at the stats and say, are we noticing any trends? You're going to find out that the Yankees offense is a lot better than it was last year. And not even to mention that last year you got absurd underperformances from guys like Gio Urshela, from a guy like Gleyber Torres, who is underperforming again this year so far.
Yeah.
And Gary Sanchez, who's having a pretty good year for Minnesota so far, which again, it's early. We never know what can happen.
I mean, Gleyber Torres with him, I mean, he's another one of those hard contact guys where he's hitting the ball hard, but he's just swinging at way too many balls out of the zone.
As yeah.
Luis Severino gives up an RBI single.
He's pressing. Reyes. That's, you know, one of those non-stats that you can kind of look at and be like, okay, it kind of feels like Gleyber Torres is trying a little bit too hard because, like, he knows he should be doing better. He's kind of, he's anxious at the plate. He's looking for pitches to drive. It's like, you got to just, that's when, as a manager, you say, you just got to take a couple days off, man. Take a couple days off.
I mean, Gleyber Torres also has to know when it comes to the Yankees infield right now, he's the odd man out. Isaiah Kiner.
Well, yeah, it's obvious.
Yeah, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, he's not having the sexiest stats, but he's having great at-bats. He's making good contact, using the whole field. And Torres has to know, Anthony Volpe's knocking on the door so that if Brian Cashman decides in June, July, whenever, that he wants another pitcher, Torres is probably going to be the first one to go.
Well, who would want him? Who would want him?
Well, I mean, you have to hope that he's going to at least improve somewhat beforehand.
Yeah, maybe. But I know everybody was throwing him in trade proposals for Frankie Montas. Like, what possible reason would the Oakland Athletics have for Gleyber Torres? What use could they put Gleyber Torres to? Yeah, they don't care about that. Clearly, they had 3,000 people in the ballpark yesterday. That doesn't matter to them at all.
No, the A's are doing the classic. They're doing the classic maneuver of tearing down a team and doing the absolute bare minimum to sell tickets just so they can try and get more sympathy for a new stadium.
Yeah, but just to, you know, bring it back to topic.
Yeah.
The Yankees are better. Josh Donaldson is an enormous upgrade over Gio Urshela. That's huge.
A great addition to the locker room.
Yeah, I like the fire a little bit. I think we're going to see it at some point this year where if the Yankees aren't going to get in ruts, like I felt like last year we were just going through the motions for half the year. And then we did have that really good stretch in July and August. And then we went back to going through the motions. I'm like, that's not going to fly this year. Josh Donaldson's going to freak out if he feels like people are going through the motions or not really putting the work in or just being like, whatever, we're the Yankees. We're going to be in the playoffs anyway, which is definitely not a guarantee because the Blue Jays look nasty. The Red Sox offense is legit. Their pitching stinks, though. The Rays are always the Rays. So it's not a definite. You're not definitely going to end up in the playoffs this year. Like
the American League East is the meat grinder of Major League Baseball.
And the Yankees just can't beat the Baltimore Orioles. That's infuriating. How many times did we see that graphic this weekend when it was like, oh, well, this was the Rays record. I think the Rays have won like 18 straight games against the Baltimore Orioles, and we're playing 500 ball earlier. Against them.
It's April. Why are we stressing about the Orioles right now? I had a nice Twitter conversation with a great friend of the pod, Max Greenfield, on Twitter. And by conversation, I mean, we tweeted back and forth at each other maybe twice. And he said, like, this is a really, some of these losses are really bad. It's April. These are when you want to have those losses. You don't want to have these losses in August when it could literally kill your momentum.
Yeah, no, that's big for momentum. But I know when you do look back at the season as a whole and you look back and you say, okay, we played pretty much 500 ball against the Baltimore Orioles like we did last year. And then you can look back at these games in April and say, how did we score one run off them in one game and zero runs off them in another? We lost a 2-3 series in those two games. We scored one total run. How did that happen? Because that's where the difference is. It's not like we're getting blown out by the Baltimore Orioles. It's not like, you know, they have Grayson Rodriguez, their top pitching prospect, come up and it's like, oh, this guy is just legit right away and he was great and he just dominated the Yankees. It's like, okay, that was a very well-pitched game from Grayson Rodriguez. It's just when you were looking at the series, it felt like, what are we doing? What is going on with the offense now? Because that was when the balls weren't getting hit hard. Against the Blue Jays and the Red Sox, we were at least hitting the ball hard and hitting into really bad luck. Against the Orioles, we weren't hitting at all.
Yeah, we were like, I wonder if the team just kind of got in its head about Baltimore last year and just started pressing a lot. It certainly could be. And granted, the umpiring towards the back end of the Friday night game wasn't the best. Tom Hallion absolutely gave a few I want to go home calls.
Oh, he stinks.
Yeah.
He stinks.
Umpiring across the board is so bad. It's kind of disgusting.
But so anyway, I don't even care about the robo-umps. Like, give them. I'm doing a story on the Atlantic League right now. I just talked to one of the Ducks outfielders, Daniel Fields. Nice. He was saying once they recalibrated the automatic strike zone, because originally like they were getting a lot more north-south instead of east-west and pitchers were used to getting calls.
Then there was that one viral clip of the ball that was like 2 feet out of the zone that the machine somehow called for a strike.
Yeah. Once they recalibrated it, it was like, okay, like this is actually really good. Like I know where the strike zone is. I don't have to look back to the umpire and say, is that as far as you're going to go today? Is that as high as you're going to go? Are you sure that was a strike? Because it wasn't when our guy was out there. You don't have to do that anymore because it's just a robot. And when I watch a guy like Tom Hallion call a game or
Jerry Lane tonight
or Jerry Lane or Angel Hernandez, obviously it's like, this is affecting the outcome. I know like part of it is like, yeah, it's the human element of baseball, but
right.
I don't want to keep human sitting element here.
Becomes a liability, then it's a problem.
Yeah. It's one thing to like miss a call and we get those umpire scorecards and who knows how accurate they actually are with guessing how many runs did you actually get back for this blown call, this blown call, this blown call. What were the odds that those runs were actually going to score? But when you look at the called strikes out of the zone and the balls that were called strikes and the strikes that were called balls, it's like this strike zone is not even consistent. It wasn't even the same batter to batter because you got one ball right next to each other. You could say even 3 inches off the plate, one of them was called a ball, one of them was called a strike. How are you as a hitter supposed to say, okay, like I recognize that pitch out there, that's going to be called the ball because it was just called the ball. And then it comes right back and now it's a strike. And that takes the bat out of the hitter's hands. That takes the offense out of the game when you do that. And of course you can go the other way where you quote unquote, put more offense in by calling more balls than strikes. But again, nobody wants to see a walk. It's like playing slow pitch softball. Like I'm not here to walk. All right.
Yeah. I mean, I drew a bunch of walks playing slow pitch softball because the pitching was that bad.
It's just swing out of the zone, man. Just do it. You're not there to walk. Fine. You're there to hit dingers.
Let's shift back to not Josh Donaldson, but his new best friend, his new best dad friend, because apparently the kids are having play dates, Garrett Cole. You do not look optimistic about this.
No, I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated. Not very frustrating. Not specifically with Garrett Cole, because I know Garrett Cole is so good. He's going to figure it out. I'm not worried about that. In the slightest. He was, even after the spider tack ban, there was like a 2-game bump where he was like, okay, like I'm just figuring my stuff out again. And then he was dominant.
Right.
But the reactions to Garrett Cole are just Sal Licata, this is one of the things that really drives me crazy. These guys who are like on WFAN, and I don't want to call Keith out because Keith's been good to me, but like he did the same thing today. And it's so frustrating to be like, you know, you're just going for a reaction right now. Like you're hurting your own credibility looking for a reaction when you're saying, is Garrett Cole washed? He came in second in Cy Young voting.
Also
6 months ago
starts. It is April.
Three starts. Yeah. Guess what? His command isn't perfect yet. They had a shortened spring training. It might've messed him up. I have zero concern about Garrett Cole. I have zero concern about him finding his command again. The stuff is fine. The stuff is still fine. Yeah. And guess what? Against Toronto, he might have hung one to Vladdy the first time, but that second pitch was beautiful. That was an inside fastball in off the plate. And Vladdy was just said, I don't care. It's gone.
Right. Garrett Cole even said, like, I have to tip my cap to Vladdy Guerrero because
it was a perfect pitch. It was a perfect pitch.
Not just that. Vladdy Guerrero is an elite hitter. He is going to have several MVP trophies in his future. There's like, sometimes a guy just owns you. And Vladdy had that kind of night.
G-Man Choi. Every time Garrett Cole pitches against him.
All this to say, Garrett Cole's going to be fine. He's got to stop with the excuses, though. That was
a little bit annoying. The Billy Crystal thing, especially. Like, all right, last night it was cold. Like, I know what it's like to play baseball in the cold. It sucks.
Okay, but Clark Schmidt and the rest of the guys didn't have any issues controlling the zone. What's Cole's excuse?
No. Yeah. I mean, it's not good to throw an excuse out there, but I can at least look at it and be like, all right, like clearly there was an outside factor that was affecting you. Like at least slightly. You never had the command anyway this year to begin with, but like clearly there was an outside factor that was at play. The Billy Crystal thing was absurd. That was ridiculous.
It's every New Yorker's favorite uncle. Don't diss him like that.
Yeah, but also just be like, oh, we're starting 4 minutes late. Okay, that messed up my whole start. Like, what do you do when you're on the road?
It didn't mess up your whole start. You had to pitch 4 minutes late. You started working too fast. It's not messing up your whole start.
Yeah, and again, the control was never there to begin with. You didn't have it. You didn't have it in game two. You didn't have it in game three.
He's going to be fine. He's got a big matchup with Shane Bieber coming up on Sunday. You know the adrenaline's going to be pumping through him for that one.
Yeah, I don't think it gets fixed on Sunday, to be honest. I think it's gonna be a little while longer. I would give him a full month before I'm like, okay, this is Cy Young Cole that we have here. I'm not saying that for the rest of the month he's gonna be as bad as he was for the first three starts.
It's gonna be an ugly start, but I have a feeling that in the next start he's gonna have
a little bit better.
Someone's gonna come together for him.
Yeah, and then we're gonna look at him on like May 15th and be like, do you believe people were worried about Garrett Cole? This guy is the nastiest pitcher in the league right now, assuming Jacob DeGrom is still out at that time. This guy's the nastiest pitcher in the league right now. Well, remember when you were worried about him? Ha! Fool. You're a fool.
Dude, I left a Yankees group chat on Sunday because everyone was like, this team sucks. Blow it up. Aaron Judge isn't a leader. Mind you, one of the people in that group chat is a former college baseball player who like knows the ins and outs of the game very well.
That doesn't mean he knows the analytics though.
He does know the analytics.
So what is he complaining about then? He knows better.
Because Yankees fans are overly emotional ever since 2019.
I guess that's fair. It is overly emotional. But also I've said this about a billion times on this podcast. I need Yankee fans to take a step back. Okay. So take a step back.
Good luck.
Realize, understand that analytics very much change the way that poor teams go about their business. They are better at developing talent than they've ever been. They are able to take those 3 years off, stack up prospects, and put together a very good team, perfectly designed the way they want them. And guess what? The playoffs are a crapshoot. They are. It's all about who got hot at the right time. Eddie Rosario last year for the Braves is the definition, the textbook definition of an average major league hitter. And he got hot at the right time. So did AJ Minter.
You're quoting Mike Francesa, who these days rarely ever has a good take. He said years ago in the playoffs, it's never the best team. It's always the hottest team.
Who gets hot at the right time. That's why you're not seeing Brian Cashman go out and be like, well, we didn't win last year. I guess we have to go sign Carlos Correa like George Steinbrenner would have done. Guess what? George Steinbrenner was not a good owner.
He really wasn't. He was
a bad owner.
People so often forget, and probably because a lot of fans today weren't alive to see this. In the 1980s, he went out and got Dave Winfield, and then when that didn't work, George Steinbrenner literally gutted the farm system to the point where it took him being literally banned from baseball for over a year just so Gene Michael could start a proper rebuild.
Exactly. George Steinbrenner was a terrible owner, but because this was, pre-analytics, poor teams didn't have the same resources that rich teams had. You had the luxury, if you're the Yankees, to say, hey, look at all these numbers that Johnny Damon and Jason Giambi put up in Oakland. Like, let's go sign them. Well, let's take them. And we can pay them a lot of money, but the A's can't. But nowadays, the A's can say, hey, look at the numbers this guy's putting up in Double A. Look at the way look at his exit velocity. Look at his contact rate. Look at his launch angle. We can stash that guy. We can stash him and then put together a really good team of extremely affordable assets. And then if we have to, we can build around it. We can add pieces that we see fit. That's how it works nowadays. That's why poor teams are good now. And that's why when you get to the postseason, think about it this way. The Orioles just took 2 or 3 from us. The Detroit Tigers swept us last year. Bad teams win in baseball all the time. The difference between the best team in the league and the worst team in the league, it's not that much. It really isn't that much.
And then you have teams like the Rangers. First off, no team is a poor team. If you're owned by a billionaire, you're not a poor team.
There's no such thing as a small market baseball team, only small market owners.
But what you do see with teams like the Texas Rangers, you have teams that take all that luxury tax money and reinvest it in player development, in analytics, putting that money into the system more and more so that at some point you can spend $500 million on Corey Seager and Marcus Semien.
And you have the pieces around to say, you know what, like our minor league pitching is like pretty solid. We feel really good because we also just got Jack Leiter. Like we can see the writing is on the wall there. We can see over the next 4 or 5 years what that could look like. So let's go sign these, like what the Padres did with, I hate Eric Hosmer. I hate him. He's the worst, but there was no reason for them to sign Eric Hosmer, say if it was 20 years ago, because you don't know what you have in these prospects, but now you can look back and say like, okay, look, like we have this guy Fernando Tatis Jr. He's pretty good. We have an idea. We want to go get Trent Grisham. We think he's a lot better than he was in Milwaukee. We think he's better than that. We have, you know, Will Myers was already on the team, but you know, we think Will Myers can be better. And we have Mackenzie Gore and we have all these young assets. Like, let's go sign Eric Hosmer, be bad for 2 years with him as our first baseman. Guess what? Opens up the door to sign Manny Machado. Now Fernando Tatis Jr. has come up. Now Mackenzie Gore has come up this year. And Mackenzie Gore has looked fantastic in two starts.
I did not see any of his pitching highlights.
He was good today. The command is still a little bit shaky, but the stuff is really nice. And he dots 96 right on the black of the plate. Whoo, it's nice. It sizzles.
This feels good to have baseball back.
Yeah, oh, it's so good. I did a podcast with Dillard Barnhart a couple weeks ago, and he was just looking for somebody to have on a podcast. I was like, hey man, I'm like, I'll do it. Like, if you haven't gotten anybody else, like, it's fine. I'm down to talk. And he's like, yeah, let's go for like half an hour. Just talk about, you know, the Yankees or whatever else you feel comfortable with. And like, this was like 3 days into the season, and 2 hours later, we're still just like talking about every team in baseball. I'm like, I missed this. This is what I live for right
as,
here.
As Aaron Judge rips a
I saw that
down the line.
That was good. That was good.
A beautiful swing. Got a little on top of it, but.
Yeah, oh, that's fine. He lifted it enough.
Yeah. All this to say, like, we definitely saw this last night. The Tigers, along with the Blue Jays, are one of the teams that have definitely worked a lot on infield positioning.
The Tigers are another perfect example of that philosophy too, where you go out and you sign Javi Baez, knowing that, you know, Casey Mize is establishing himself. Spencer Torkelson is about to come up. You've got some other assets in the minor leagues. When you sign Javi Baez, you don't know Spencer Torkelson's going to be on the roster yet.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and then you get spring training. It's like, oh yeah, like Spencer Torkelson, he's ready. He's ready. Let's throw him on there.
Javi Baez is so bad though.
Yeah, that was dumb. That was really dumb. And it's like, it felt like they just missed on Correa. Like, they offered him $275 million, which is it's not enough for Carlos Correa, but it was like a very decent offer. The best offer that he did get.
In the old Tiger Stadium, that's a great signing. In Comerica Park, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. No, it's the best offer he got. So they definitely tried, and then they panicked. And they were like, we didn't get him. We have to go get someone else. How about Javi Baez?
You know what we got to talk about? We got to talk about Nasty Nestor.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Love me some Nestor.
A turtle daddy.
I love – well, he donated the turtle.
No. He's still Bronxy's dad. Always will be.
Okay, well, he gave Bronxy up for adoption. He gave him away. But fine, no, it's fine. It would have been unfair for Nestor to keep the turtle being on the road, having to get it through customs.
Yeah.
It would have been unfair to the turtle. I'm sure he has a very happy home. I think he's at like a community center in the Bronx now.
Yeah, he is. He's like, it's like literally down the block from Yankee Stadium. He's got a great looking tank.
Nestor Cortez Jr., I love it. He went from an inside joke on Yankees Twitter to just being like an actual frontline starter. And it's not like he just had a good 2021. It was just like, he figured it out.
He learned spin rate on all his pitches.
Yeah. And he learned how to, he got better at balancing so he could mess with timing and the way he deploys his arsenal, which, let's be honest, like, the arsenal is not great for Nestor Cortez. The spin rate's solid, but you know, the velocity is very much down. He's not a fireballer, but it is all that deception that he's got going on now.
What's the average feel on it? Like, is he even hitting 91?
91 sounds right.
Yeah.
I would say 90 or 91 for the fastball. Yeah. It's not going to power anybody away, but you're sitting there listening to like, there's Nestor Cortez. He's got 12 strikeouts today. Okay.
I almost started a Twitter campaign on Sunday. Hey, like, just give him the All-Star game right now. Nestor Cortez is starting the All-Star game.
Yeah, he could have been an All-Star last year. He finished the year with a sub-3.
He did. He really did.
In like a lot of innings, not in like 30 innings. Like, he pitched a lot of innings last year.
This means I have to get a Matt Blake jersey. Someone should get a
Matt
Blake.
Matt Blake fixed Nestor. He fixed Clark Schmidt. He maybe fix Davey. We got to see it at the major league level, but I will say Davey looked a lot better in spring training than he has in the past. And then he definitely did in 2021. Yeah. So yes, cause he's not with Matt Blake anymore. So he needs Matt Blake back.
Tyone looks really good this year.
Tyone looks great. Luis Severino, even tonight, looked very, very strong. Very strong.
He gave up a little too much hard contact to start the second inning, but he settled down nicely.
Well, he's always given up hard contact. He's very much like Cole right. in that way, where it's like the reverse Joey Gallo. Like, I'm either going to strike you out or you're going to make like hard fly ball contact.
Well, that's just like the nature of fastball pitchers, I think.
Yeah. But a lot of time when you're looking at Luis Severino, you're like, you know what? Like, this looks really good. The stuff looks really good. He looks healthy. That's the big thing. He looks like he could go to like 80 pitches. He looks strong. That's huge. And Sevy hasn't gotten enough love this year either, because everyone's so concerned about, first of all, Nestor Cortez being the ace. Second of all, Gerrit Cole not being good right now. Like, Sevy has just flown under the radar.
Phil Hughes even tweeted, like, if this is the Severino the Yankees are getting, watch out.
Yeah, because Max has been saying this for 2 years. The Yankees have one of the best rotations in baseball, and it's really so deep. Look at Luis Gil, Michael King, Clark Schmidt, Davey Garcia. You have options in the minor leagues too.
James, I just want to take this time to personally apologize to Michael King.
Yes, do it. Do it.
Last time we talked,
You messed up.
Man, did I mess up.
You messed up big time.
Wow, you're not letting me live this one down.
I told you while we were talking, I was like, doubt Michael King one more time. Just do it. Go ahead. Say it again. Say again, Michael King's not good. Say it again.
Do you want me to say Michael King's not good one more time just so you can properly tee up on me right now? Okay.
I'm gonna while you're giving your apology, I'm just gonna pull up that text from the other night. Yeah. Go ahead. Give your apology, Josh. So give your apology.
Jesus Christ, James. All right. So I really want to personally apologize. I'm even holding the microphone right now to personally apologize to Michael King. He of the blazing through the minor, through three minor league levels all in one season. I was so unfair to you. I expected Cy Young things out of you when you just really needed all that time to learn how to pitch. Bases loaded, nobody out, to striking out George Springer, Bo Bichette into the double play. I wanted to scream, but that would have woken my baby. But Michael King, I am ever, ever so sorry. I never should have doubted you. Please keep doing awesome things out of the bullpen and abandon all hopes of being a starter.
Yes, this comes, let's see, 12 days after I received a text message from Josh with all caps and bullhorn emoji on each side. Mike King is garbage. And I said, I mean, that's a cheap run on bad contact, sir. Runner on second rule. Flicked a base hit. You can't put that on him. Sweeper looked pretty good.
That was opening day, right?
Yeah, that was opening day when we went into extra innings with the Red Sox. And I was like, the pitches look really good. He got boned by the runner on second rule and a little flick base hit. Like, he's giving off soft contact. He's already got the inherited runner. Like, you can't just put that on him. Don't put that evil on him.
I was at opening day for Josh Donaldson getting that game-winning hit up the middle. I lost my voice for 2 days just because at that point I just kept screaming, Josh, Josh. Like, oh God, I'm very proud to be a Josh along with Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, it's a good time these days for a Yankees Josh. Josh, he's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start, but like,
he's gotten off to a slow start, but he's starting to make that really good contact with the ball.
Yeah, you can see the next stage. You can see it. It's not like he looks lost up there. It's like, okay, and like, he's just missing on these pitches.
All season long, I've seen him swing at literally two pitches out of the zone too.
Oh yeah, he doesn't do that. He doesn't swing. Oh, that one will sneak through.
Oh, and AJ Hinch. Oh, you're a little bit ahead of me.
Maybe. It's fine. That was soft contact for Sevy. We're fine.
It's fine.
Ground ball.
Yep.
Right into where the second baseman would have been playing if there was no shift. That's fine. That's fine.
While we're like, I don't know how much more Yankees talk we have left to do, but I just gotta say the Tigers need a uniform upgrade real bad.
Yeah, their uniform sucks, especially their road ones. I hate those grays.
I kind of miss the mid-90s ones where they had like the D and the actual tire kind of going like, whoa, like from behind it.
Yeah, they were pretty cool. I just think like the Detroit Tigers are just the team that are forever going to be like in the lower tier of uniforms. Like, it's just what can you really do unless you go full like Cincinnati Bengals? Like, how much creative power do you really have with, because you're not getting rid of the old English D. You're not doing that.
You're not getting rid of the Gothic D. You can't lean too far into the orange and blue just because like of the Mets, and it's hard. And you can't really find like orange. You can make it work with navy, but it's not long-term.
Yeah. There's only so much you can do. if you're the Detroit Tigers. So the Cubs have a good alternate uniform. I like the blue uniforms.
They could maybe reach some deal with the Hanshin Tigers and adopt their colors out of Japan.
I don't know what their colors are.
It's like, it's sort of like a pinstripe yellowish kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess it would have to be like a whole color change for them to actually have like good uniforms, because it is like the most basic uniform in Major League Baseball right now, I think. Or like, who else? Maybe the Kansas City Royals, but even they have the baby blues.
Yeah, like, and their vintage road unis are really nice, like from the
80s. Yeah, they are.
But that's what I do when I play MLB The Show. I put everyone in the retro unis.
Yeah, naturally. Who plays on regular uniforms in MLB The Show? Kills the entire point.
Anyway, what else we got to talk about? Anything?
All right, let's give credit to the bullpen. The bullpen has been fantastic early on this season.
Yeah, Chapman's got the usual issues, but he's still Chapman when he's Chapman, and his contract's expiring anyway.
And Jonathan Loaisiga is the closer of the future. I loved how he was like, oh, well, they haven't really approached me about an extension. Like, yeah, it's because they don't want to extend you. They have they have a bullpen factory now. They don't have to pay you $16 million a year anymore. They can just create bullpen arms that are almost as good as you. Especially, I would go so far as to say Jonathan Loaisiga is better than Aroldis Chapman, just because of the inconsistency factor with Chapman. Like, if you're just talking about Lasagna's stuff,
finding his stuff this season, and it's very clear that is indeed the case. But again,
he's fine. Yeah, he's fine.
He'll get there. It was short in spring training. He's still young. I mean, I do have concerns about his shoulder, but as a relief pitcher, he'll be fine.
Jonathan Loaisiga is fine. Everyone's been talking about Hoy Park this year, also because of Tom Scabelli, who might be the dumbest person on earth. Literally got famous for being in the same room as his boss while he won a bet, and all of a sudden he's this guy's lucky charm and goes everywhere. I hate him, and the only reason he's on short porch is because I couldn't find another Yankee fan in the entire building besides Hubs. Like, we want to start a Yankee podcast. Who are we going to start it with? I don't know. How about that intern over there? You were a Yankee fan intern? Yeah, that's the amount of knowledge that he has. Still complaining about Hoy Park when Hoy Park has been absolutely nothing, and Clay Holmes is a frontline reliever, like a high leverage elite ground ball reliever.
Yeah, like that power sinker, man. Like, it makes you miss Zach Britton a little less.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't even really miss Zach Britton all that much. No, after the last couple of years, it was time.
Sinkers are on the way out as it is.
And not for Jonathan Loaisiga.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Those who can throw a proper sinker are so few and far between that like, you really got to pick and choose who's throwing it. Like,
they're really leaning into that sweeper this year too.
Is that?
The Yes broadcast has been on one this year. I am losing my mind with the Yes broadcast, that the way they pan to every fly ball, I'm like, it's a 500 footer. That's a 500 footer easy. And then it's like a can of corn for the left fielder. I'm like,
Take it up with Medvin.
Yeah, I gotta tell Medvin. I'm like, hey man, what's going on over there? All right, this is you even
Shame
got
on you, Mike Medvin.
The other week with Kay and Sterling and that Giancarlo Stanton flyout, where it was work was so bad that I don't know if that was on the road or at home or if they were watching, because that's like broadcasting 101, right? Watch the outfielder, not the ball.
What was worse, that or the K Rod thing on ESPN 2?
Let's talk about that for a second.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Let's wrap with K-Rod. Oh my Lord.
So
ESPN 2, like, they caught lightning in a bottle with the Manning cast.
Because it's funny. Because they're fantastic. Funny. That's
You're
why
not
they
a football
want
guy and you like it.
Yeah, that's why they want the Manning cast. That's why the people want it. Because Peyton Manning and Eli Manning are funny. They have a good time. You're sitting there with Michael Kay, who, first of all, he is a great broadcaster, but watching him tell jokes is like watching grass grow.
Oh my God. Did I ever tell you about the worst joke I heard Michael Kay make, like, ever?
No.
I remember. This was the opening series of the 2008 season. I remember because I was watching in my college apartment. Singleton was telling some story about how some old player from back in the day, their car broke down in the Bronx. They were very new to New York, and they pretty much had to walk to Yankee Stadium and described it like pretty much walking blindfolded because they had no idea where they were going. And then, like, they, like, kind of laugh about it. Then Singleton, Michael, if you were just blindfolded and dropped off in the middle of the Bronx, could you find your way to Yankee Stadium? Kay, in the Michael Kay voice, goes, what? I grew up here, man. Come on. It's the Bronx. This was my hood.
Oh. Wasn't yeah,
even,
no. Listen.
Wasn't even a joke. You're just being a wise ass, and he failed miserably at it.
Michael Kay is a great play-by-play announcer. He's very good at it. And it's fine. Yes. You're just not a funny guy. And it felt it's like really ESPN not. Just sabotaging baseball, because we'll get to A-Rod in a second. But, like,
A-Rod's
how did you guys not realize that the reason the Manning cast worked was because Peyton and Eli are funny? They're jokers, and we like to make jokes about them. I made it through one inning of the K-Rod broadcast because Michael Kay is not funny. He's calling a normal game, and Alex Rodriguez, for someone who hit 696 career home runs, won't shut up about bunting.
Tell us how you really feel about that.
I hate it. He really just got a note from ESPN like, hey, why don't you try to cater to like 60-year-old white guys? And he said, bet. Contact hitting, Xander Bogaerts, great defender because he's a good hitter. Bunt. Everyone's got a bunt. Everybody. It's sacrifice bunt.
Part,
push
the
bunt.
The best part of K-Rod, because I think I turned it on in the third inning of that Sunday night game. Best part for me was when David Ortiz showed up and was so very obviously like just appearing on his phone, his giant Samsung phone from a
he's
random
probably sitting there being like, this is never going to work. And the worst part was like the ESPN broadcast was awesome. The regular one, like the regular Sunday night baseball.
Yeah, Ravage,
nobody
Cone,
complained about it.
And I don't know who the other one is.
When was the last time we had a Sunday night broadcast that nobody complained about?
Yeah, good point.
Exactly. It's been years, literal years.
But what was really funny about Ortiz dialing in, though, people like this might be on YouTube. It was so obvious from the camera angles. He was trying to be real close. He was clearly at some bar restaurant in the Dominican Republic and just popped off to the minute.
No, I got to call in really quick.
Yeah. And they said, oh, Dave, you look relaxed. He's like, man, I'm in the Dominican. Of course I'm relaxed. Yeah. And then Roger Clemens comes on and he's so very like, he's got a very,
he looks terrible.
Well, he's also 60 years old.
Yeah. Right, but he really like, even for 60, he looked terrible.
He looks like an old guy from Texas sitting in his home office. He had a very nice home video set up, but yeah, he's an old baseball guy catering to that crowd that ESPN is so,
I was like, but then why? ESPN, we liked the StatCast broadcast that you had last year. First of all, because the crew was better. And second of all, because like you're trying to get younger fans interested in baseball. Like, show them what they want to see. Nobody wants to hear Michael Kay and Alex Rodriguez lie about the most productive way to score runs. Well, you got to get your first guy has to hit a single. Then you have to sacrifice bunt him over to second base. And then you have to hit with runners in scoring position. Like, how many times do we have to teach you this lesson, old man? That is not the best way to score runs anymore. It's just not. It just isn't, mathematically speaking. And we have a sample size of about 8 million.
It was so bad. Get Cameron Maben on there. He's great.
Cameron Maben has been awesome. I was really looking forward to the Rucco and Maben booth because, again, Michael Kay is a great broadcaster, but he is just not someone who I think him and Cameron Maben are going to like really vibe together, because Michael Kay is very old school and Cameron Maben is fun. He does like to tell jokes, and Michael Kay is not a joker.
For those listening right now, he called RBI's steaks tonight because ribeyes.
Yep. I love that term. That's a good term for me.
He's got this really calm, laid back nature where like it kind of makes you just want to watch a game with him out of the booth.
Yeah. That's what baseball booths should be. And that's part of the reason I like watching the Padres so much, because first of all, Don Orsillo calls a great game, but also really like does. If it's a slow game, you see what I tweeted earlier, like Mudcat just took a bat out of the booth and started hitting Don Orsillo in the head with it. Very light, a light touch. But I was like, yeah, this game is going kind of slow right now. Let's get a look in the booth. Let's tell jokes. Let's have some fun out here. Like, that's what baseball should be. Michael, that would never fly with Michael Kay. Could you imagine if David Cohn was in the booth or Cameron Maben and be like, hey, Michael, can I hit you in the head with this bat?
No, you can't. Yeah, not a come chance.
On. Come on. Again, it's just, that's why I prefer Rucco to Kay, just because he gets it. He gets what baseball should be. And it's not, you know, the no cheering in the press box thing. I always hated that. It's like, all right, like, how about you get me excited sitting on the couch? I want to feel excited. I don't want this to be like the most perfectly called game ever. I want to feel like you're invested.
Does Yankee Stadium have that rule? No cheering in the press box.
Oh, that's like an unwritten rule of all journalism.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, all journalism. Yeah, no cheering in the press box.
Probably except under select circumstances, like if it's the World Series and the team you're covering wins, then of course you cheer along with everyone.
Oh, I don't know, man. They're pretty strict about it. They're pretty strict. I would say maybe like if you saw a no hitter or a perfect game, and it's like then everybody in the press box and everybody in both booths is like, wow, we just witnessed history. Like now we can get a little bit excited about it.
We'll close with this. I threw a perfect game in MLB The Show the other day.
Yeah, what'd you do? Throw curveballs in the dirt and play against some 12-year-old?
No, it was in my franchise.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
At least you have to throw strikes there.
Yeah, and I pitch on either the hardest level or the one right below it.
Who'd you throw it with?
Scherzer.
Nice.
And I was out of energy for the last two outs.
How many strikeouts?
12.
It's pretty good. Yeah. You see, we keep saying we're going to close on this, but this one we're really going to close on. You see this 20-year-old kid in Japan threw perfect game with 19 strikeouts, comes back a week later, throws 8 perfect innings with like 12 strikeouts.
Did the bullpen hold it?
I think so, probably. I don't know. I didn't see how that game ended because the news story was like, yeah, so far this guy's thrown 17 perfect straight innings.
And cue the Ohtani hype.
Yeah. And first of all, like if you can do that in any league, like you're going to get that hype, and you probably do have nasty stuff. And he does have nasty stuff for a 20-year-old. It is very good stuff. Very good fastball. So yeah, I'm just keep an eye on him a couple years down the line.
I love baseball.
I love international baseball. All right. Yeah, we'll wrap it up there then. I'm gonna have to send you this video because now this video is gonna be on YouTube, so everyone can stare at me.
You have the passwords. You can upload it.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. I do have the passwords. I'm gonna have to scroll back through those texts. So now with my exciting hand motions can actually be seen by people, and when I get like really fired up.
We didn't talk with our hands much this episode.
Yeah, but I did yell a lot, and when I get really angry, it's gonna turn into like my face turns very red when I start yelling.
Michael King is as bad as Thin Mints.
Shut up. See y'all next week.